everybody. What is going on? I hope everyone is doing well, and welcome back once again to a brand new episode of Sweeten Up Podcast, season number 2, episode number 82. I am your host, Jeff Spencer. Thank you so much for taking some time to join me today. I greatly appreciate it, whether you have for an entire season, an entire year, or you are today for the first time. Thank you so much for joining us. However, if you are just joining us for the first time, take a look back at our library of 81 episodes anytime you want, anywhere you listen to your podcasts. As always, if you like what you hear on the podcast today and you want to hear more, please be sure to tell all your friends and subscribe to the show anywhere you get your podcasts so that you never miss a future episode. The podcast is available on all major podcast platforms. You can find us on Instagram and Facebook. Just search for Sweeten Up Podcast. With that being said, my guest on the podcast today is the great and powerful Matthew Kirschner. Matthew Kirschner is a pastry chef and the owner of Uncle Matt's Bakery and Cafe, located in Sandy Hook, Connecticut. He trained with master pastry chefs from around the world at renowned establishments such as the Russian Tea Room and the Essex House Hotel in New York City, in addition to the Roger Sherman Inn and Bantam Bread Company in Connecticut. His love for baking can be traced back to his grandmother's cookbook, which is still lined with notes from when she would earmark recipes for Matt as a child. Getting close to those childhood memories is an adventure that drives his culinary interest to this day. We were super excited to get the opportunity to chat with Matthew live inside Uncle Matt's Bakery and Cafe in Sandy Hook. We had a wonderful conversation, and in part one of this two-part podcast episode, we covered Matt's beginnings in the baking world, where he's from, the infamous places he has worked at, how he has survived during the COVID-19 pandemic, growing up in his childhood, and so much more. So without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, here he is, my friend and everyone's favorite uncle, part one of my two-part conversation with Matthew Kirschner. Joining me on the podcast today, inside of Uncle Matt's Bakery and Cafe, located at 105 Churchill Road here in Sandy Hook, Connecticut, I am so excited to have this wonderful individual sitting right across from me. He has trained with master pastry chefs from around the world at renowned establishments such as the Russian Tea Room and the Essex House Hotel in New York City, to name a few. The great and powerful Uncle Matt, Matthew Kirschner. And Matt, thank you so much for joining me on the show. And how are you, my friend? What's going on?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me on.
Of course. It's a nice Sunday in February, early February. We're 1 week away from the Super Bowl. We were actually just chatting before about our love of football and how you're an Eagles fan and all that stuff. So,
oh yeah.
So, you know what it's like to go through some hardships like it is with me as a Jet fan, you know.
Yes, very
with
very
some
true.
Droughts. I mean, you won a Super Bowl a little bit ago. I mean,
one for three. We're good. Yeah.
But and then Andy Reid went on to the Chiefs, and you know what happened there and everything like that. But of course, he's got Mahomes, who's incredible. But listen, Matt, thank you so much for joining me. I'm so glad I could join you. I was just talking to you about how Steph Webster, shout out to her from CT Byte, she was here recently. And I spoke to you, I think it was like back in November. I DM'd you on Instagram and I'm like, Matt, I want to come on. I want you to come on and it's going to be great and everything. And you're like, yeah, let's do it. And then life got in the way. My work got so busy and everything got so crazy at, you know, my day-to-day job. And I'm just so glad that finally here, February 2022, we got to finally do this. So thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Truly appreciate it. And I'm glad to be on. You know, when you did contact me, I think it was right before Thanksgiving. So I was like, I don't know how this is going to work out in December, you know, with all the holiday orders and stuff like that. But, you know, I was hoping when it dies down a little bit.
Yeah. Let the storm pass.
Exactly.
The good storm. It's a good thing. Very busy and it's beautiful here. I mean, I was just saying to you before, man, just I'm looking at a beautiful fireplace, Midnight Joe artwork, you know, right there on the wall from BD Provisions, a tremendous, tremendous brew of coffee they got over there. And this is just such a cozy place right here in downtown Sandy Hook. You know, my hometown of Newtown is right up the street. It's great. I love it. And like I said, I was so bummed I moved to Danbury recently. You know, no offense to Danbury, but man, it would be great to be here and come here every morning. And it's a total vibe.
Yeah. You know, when I first came to this place, I actually met my landlord through a mutual friend who is an electrician of ours. And he's like, oh, you got to go check out this place. And I'm like, All right. 5 minutes later, I get a text message from my landlord like, hey, if you want to check it out, come right over. All of a sudden, I walk through the door. I just instantly fell in love with it. It's, you know, the house itself is approximately like 300 years old. So it had a nice rustic vibe to it.
Nice.
And it just felt like a second home to me,
nice.
Which it actually turned
to you.
Yeah. It just, you know, if I'm going to be baking in like a professional kitchen, I'd rather be a home, you know, not a heartless kitchen, so to speak.
Right.
You know, some places that I did work at the kit, you know, you felt very confined to a kitchen and, you kind of lose your love for things over time. But, since coming back into here, I was like, oh my God, like I'm starting to remember of other things I used to do at past places that I'm starting to bring back and falling in love with baking all over again.
That's awesome. You can't be that right when you're just like, it just starts anew, so to speak.
Exactly.
And you're in a space where you're like, man, this is special. This is something special.
And, you know, during like 2020, it was, you know, it was a funny, interesting time for everybody. But for me, like I started doing like online classes for people, you know, so because nobody could go out anywhere. And I made it very affordable. It wasn't like, oh, I was trying to make money or anything like that. It's like, you know, I'm bored. I want to talk to people. So what's the safest way to do this and have a little fun? So I did the baking classes and I started giving out some sourdough starter for people who really want to get into breads because there was that yeast shortage at one point. I remember my wife coming home like, do we have yeast in the house? I'm like, what's going on? And
what happened?
Yeah, so but luckily enough, you know, I have a white starter, I have a rice starter, so I was fine, you know. But when people say, oh, do you have any yeast, I'm like, no, but I have sourdough starter, which is probably better for you anyway versus commercial yeast.
Right.
So I would leave it outside the mailbox and with their name on it and feeding instructions in a bag. And I think some of them still have it. And I'm very happy that it's still alive and traveling around. Others, they're afraid to tell me that maybe they just forgot about it.
Gotcha. That's great. And I'm so glad you mentioned COVID because one of the places I usually start with my guests is, you know, how did you get through such a difficult time? I mean, a crazy time for just restaurants and food business in general. So how did you get by and tell people exactly when you opened Uncle Matt's? Because, I mean, it's right in the thick.
So during COVID, it wasn't an easy time. I actually wasn't working. I was actually in a process before March of 2020 to purchase another location to take over the business and kind of just turn into what I wanted to. Unfortunately, the deal did fall through and I'm kind of, you know, it was a blessing in disguise, so to speak. I was working crazy hours at my last place, which I loved. It was at the Banta Bread Company.
Yeah, I've heard great things about them.
It's still running strong today and I'm really happy that, you know, they recently just became Best Bread and Food and Wine magazine. And I, you know, I texted the owner. I was like, Niles, congratulations. You deserve it. It's awesome. And he's like one of my biggest fans. He actually came here. I'll get into that afterwards. But during 2020, I didn't see so much of my kids prior. And it was always because I was working or I'm driving around, taking the activities or, you know, just normal everyday life.
Sure.
It was weird going from baker to teacher. relearning math. I was like, what is this?
Yeah. What is this? Right. Yeah.
I don't get it. I still don't. but,
I was terrible at math.
I'm good at certain math. but you know, it was, so I had time to plan. I had time to like really, you know, sit down and plan when I'm going to open this, like what my menu is really going to be like. It just gave me time. It gave me more time, more prep time. And luckily enough, a friend of mine who I grew up with, he's an executive chef, and I contacted him like, hey, do you mind helping me out with the food menu? Because that was one part of the industry I didn't really like excel at or like really want to like concentrate on was like savory options, like sandwiches and stuff like that.
Gotcha.
I couldn't fillet a fish. I couldn't debone a steak.
So you're a pastry guy.
I'm strictly pastry.
Nice. You bake.
Yeah, exactly. so when I did meet my landlord, he, you know, we got everything summed up by April of 2021. And by June 26 of 2021, doors opened to the public. And it was the most terrifying and exciting day of my life.
I had just moved. I moved to Danbury in April. That's what I was saying. I miss this Uncle Matt's vibe that's going on. I bummed me out.
But, you know, before I opened, my former employer from Band of Brads, he came and visited me. He actually brought me two posters. One is the one right behind me.
Oh,
and,
nice.
And one is in the other room. It's like a beer bread poster. And, you know, he was super excited for me. He was sad that I left Bantam Breads, but, like, you know, waking up at like 12:30 at night and driving 45 minutes up to North Litchfield.
Yeah.
It was taking a toll on me.
That's cool though, because Litchfield is popping.
Yeah. And you know, I loved my time there. It was nothing like I would honestly say that, like, I've never felt more closer to an employer, because we didn't just talk about bread. We talked about life. We talked about things that were going on in the world. We had like really good conversations, but you know, it was just time for me to,
you were ready for the next step.
I really was. And I think he knew that too. He knew like I wouldn't be able to like help take over and move Bantam Breads into the next, because I'm so far away.
Right.
But you know, I still talk to him, and, that's actually where I met one of my other bakers. A very interesting story. So
perfect, lay it on me. I love interesting stories.
So my baker, Junior, he greatest baker I've ever known. He's such a sweetheart. He's a very fun person to work with. So a little something about me is I am a type 1 diabetic. I do wear an insulin pump and I can continuous glucose monitor and everything. And I'm, you know, I like to say that I am healthy, even though I'm an oxymoron, you know, being a pastry chef and a type 1 diabetic. But,
interesting, definitely interesting.
I remember after a couple weeks, when I started working at Bantam Bread Company, I would take like a little pastry every now and again from him because it was really good. And one day he looks at me with like this really long face, and I'm like, Junior, you okay? And he's like, Mateo, what's that? And he's looking at my wire that's sticking out from my pocket from my insulin pump.
Jesus.
And I'm like, oh, it's my insulin pump. And with like a very serious face, he looks at me. He's like, you're diabetic? And I'm like, yeah. And the biggest scream, I'm killing you, man. It was so loud. It was like in shock. Everybody was like in shock. Like, what's going on? And he's like, because he tells me like his mother's diabetic. And like he's like, no, I'm not bringing food home to kill you. You know, that's where the beginning of our relationship started.
That's hilarious.
And it's like, I was so happy when he told me he would jump on and join me. He already left Bantam Bread before I did. So it was where he was just didn't work out. And I was like, come work for me. You know, I'll make sure he knows I'll treat him right. Cause he, you know, he's a little bit older in age. And I told him like, you know what, Junior, you've been working your butt off for so long. I want you to have the weekends with your grandchildren and your your family. Don't worry about weekends.
Nice.
And you know, my kids adore Junior, and my kids adore every employee that I have. They love every single person. My wife loves every employee I have, but that's my Junior story.
That's a great story, man. That's a great story. And it's stories like those and friendships like those that build futures and build great things for people. And, you know, when you can come together like that, it's almost like, you know, we were talking about football. It's almost like a Super Bowl winning team. You know, you can't beat it.
Yes. And, you know, and that goes for my employee back there, Colin, who I met when I was at Cafe Espresso.
I loved that place. You were over there?
Yeah.
I
was one of the original pastry chefs there.
Oh, okay. Wow. I loved that place. I was so sad when they left.
You know, it was like one of those like COVID kill stories.
Yeah.
You know, COVID really took everything out from them, and it was a shame. And that was actually the place I was going to be purchasing, but it was just nobody could have predicted what happened.
Right.
It was so early, nobody could really predict what any restaurant or any food establishment, and my heart goes out to any place that did have to close. And I hope in the future they can reopen.
Yeah.
Because we do need more food establishments. We do need more customer service, not just in our area, but all around. I mean, it's like, I wish I could help every place out because that's who I am as a person. But
I was saying during the pandemic, like when one closes, like that's too much. Like,
yeah.
Like I was like, when one closes, it's just awful.
I mean, I have hundreds of friends who are chefs, and I would say more than 90% of them lost their jobs. And now it's just tougher for them to go back. And because now they don't really want to work those long hours. And, you know,
exactly. Like on the flip side, it's so hard for restaurateurs.
Yes.
To find work. So my buddy Vince, he owns a bunch of different places, and he's looking for work right now. And he owns Lucas Local. He owns Centrico and Bethel.
Okay.
The Quarter, which is coming soon. So he's got a bunch of different places and he's looking for help. And he actually DM'd me the other day sharing a post about looking for workers and people that can, give him a hand and everything like that. So yeah, it's definitely tough.
I can honestly say that I am very grateful that I have the amount of staff that I have.
Yeah, you got a lot of people.
And you know what? It's, in the beginning, a lot of them were former Cafe Espresso employees. Others were former Butcher's Best employees.
Oh, cool. Love Butcher's Best. Finney's, they're friends of mine. I love all that going on over there.
Yeah, my the owner, Steve, his wife is actually my son's teacher.
Oh. Go figure.
Yeah. So, it was funny how everything just lined up. And I'm happy and grateful that I can offer the people jobs and a fun work environment, not have to be stressful. And that was the first thing I told all my employees at our first meeting. I'm like, you know, guys, I know things can be tough in life, but there's only one person that has a lot to be stressed in this place, and that's me. Everybody else, just smile on their face, good customer service, and top-notch food. That's all I want.
That's
and
awesome.
That's what they do. That's what they do for me, and I can't. Again, totally grateful for it. Would love to say, but just like in every other food place and everywhere, can't please everybody.
No,
and
of course not.
It's, you know, we've had our ups and we've had our downs, you know, it's, but we're trying to make things right. We're trying to, you know, push forward and not back.
Nice.
So, but you know, some of my employees, I told from day one, I was like, listen, I know you don't want to, I don't want you working for me forever. I want you to follow your own paths. I have two baristas who are really following their paths of what they really want to do, and I couldn't be happier. One decided she's going to go back to school. The other one is finishing school and finishing up his schooling for becoming a teacher. And I say that to any employee. I'm like, whatever your passion is, follow it. Don't give up on it, because otherwise I wouldn't be here today.
Right.
That's awesome. It was a long road for me to get here. Doing this for almost 20 years, worked at many, many different places. And I had to sacrifice a lot. I sacrificed a lot of family time. I sacrificed a lot of like just enjoyment in life, but there was a goal ahead of it. So yeah. At least I know, at least I can say I followed my dreams, whether my dreams will last forever. Only I can say that.
Right.
So, but I still enjoy what I do.
And that's awesome.
So
you're a leader of people. I feel like you're sort of like a born leader. And just the way you talk and speak about your employees and how much you care about them and how much you want to put the pressure on you and not them. That's a very interesting quality. It's something I've never really heard too many people say on the show. So that's really, really awesome.
Oh, thank you. I mean, and honestly, I don't say it to like for BS work or anything like that. Like,
no, of course
you can
not.
Ask any of them. Like,
comes from the heart. Yeah.
You know, I didn't go around the corner and give them $5 and say this. It's like, if there's a problem, there's always a solution. Like I'm always willing to help out, and even like outside of their problem, outside of the building. Like if you have an issue, let me know. To be honest, one of my line cooks, he's in a really weird living arrangement right now. I'm trying to find him another apartment.
Gotcha.
So he can,
everybody should be able to lay their head down to rest every night and not have to worry about anything. I do worry about him. I do worry about everybody that does work for me, because I don't want them being stressed out. I don't want them have to worry about anything. You will always have a job here, you know, one way or another.
Gotcha.
So
very cool.
And I'm hoping with the, when spring comes back around and the patio opens, there'll be more business and, you know, there'll be other things that I'm planning. I'm waiting on my damn bread oven. That's what I'm really waiting for.
Oh, we got a bread oven coming.
Yeah,
right,
I have a bread. I'm doing a little bit of kitchen remodeling, doing a little expansion. So I can start selling more bread and different breads as well. I have a lot of customers. I ask, oh, why don't you make this? Why don't you make that? It's so hard with my ovens now that I can't keep temperature control.
Gotcha.
So it's, yeah. So I'm going from 2 decks to four decks.
Gotcha.
And hopefully I start my weekend brunch menu with like homemade Belgian waffles, like real authentic Belgian waffles. My head kitchen manager, she's not going to like this, but I have mentioned ideas of crepes, but we're trying to put together a really nice brunch menu.
Very cool.
Something different that's not just on the board.
Sure. Gotcha.
And, you know, I'm willing to help out any restaurants in the area who would like to carry Uncle Matt's breads.
Awesome. That's very cool. I love that. You know, there's so much going on here. So much positive vibes. This great, you know, this place just gave me that the minute I came in, which is really, really great. And you can tell when you come in here that a lot of blood, sweat, and tears went into this place. And I definitely want to get to some of the places you worked at, but what I also want to ask is, you know, where are you from? Where did you grow up? What was your childhood like? And, you know, what are some things from your early days that kind of brought you to where you are today and sort of resonate today still?
Okay. Well,
and if you, oh, and yeah, and if you could just bring it. Yeah.
No, sorry. Perfect. If
I just want to get that one, make sure I get this good. You got a great story, man. I want to make sure I get it to the people.
So I originally grew up outside of Philadelphia. Go Birds.
Go Eagles.
So my love for baking started when I was really young, and my I learned a lot from my grandmother, my mom's mother, and she loved me very much. That's why she used to sneak me treats all the time. She didn't want me to be felt left out because of my diabetes and stuff like that.
Gotcha.
But none of her stuff really had that so much sugar or anything like that would have done harm to me. But I started cooking a little bit. I started making pizza doughs. Like my mom could tell you, like I would come home from after school in soccer cleats, standing in the kitchen, like patting out pizza dough, getting dinner ready.
That's awesome.
And leaving track marks along the way. And, you know, in high school, I worked at a couple places, but, you know, I wanted to kind of enjoy my high school years. And, you know, I've had fun with my friends and like any other teenager, just, you know, go to quote unquote parties and driving around and doing knucklehead things.
Of course.
I got really serious, like when I made the decision to really just stay in the field, when my wife got into medical school and we moved to New York, and I was already working in the industry for 4 or 5 years before we moved there. And she was like, oh, you should go to school. And, you know, a lot of places would want to see that, like a diploma. Living on Long Island is not cheap. No. Unfortunately. So
no, I have friends there.
So I originally enlisted into the New York restaurant school. Then by the time I graduated, it became the Art Institute in New York City. I'm like, oh, this is awesome. Let me tell you. At the end of the day, it was fun. I met a few people who I still talk to this day. The school, unfortunately, is no longer around.
Right.
But that's when working in New York City restaurants, that's where you can really make or break somebody's career. I can tell you that firsthand. I guess I felt lucky for the chefs that I did work under. You know, they taught me a lot. There was the first French pastry chef that I worked under was Amadou Lee, and
great name.
He has an incredible backstory. But he, you know, it's funny talking to a French pastry chef who speaks broken English. So it's I had to teach him a little English. Like, no, that's not what it means. Like, that's all. He's like, oh, what are you talking about? Like, you know, it's but when I separated myself from him, that's where I found my next mentor. He was Morgan Larson. He's a Swedish pastry chef. He has a really long pastry career. He actually he owned a few bakeries over in Sweden. Then he sold them all and came over and worked at the St. Regis in LA, then throughout New York City. And the funny thing about him was, like, when I first met him, it was at the Russian Tea Room, and he was like, oh, we don't solicitate for jobs and everything. I'm like, well, you know what? Here, take my resume. If you want to take a shot on a young kid, let me know. And he's like, yeah, I'll think about it. Like, sarcastically. Then all of a sudden, I get a call from him, like, 2 weeks later. He's like, you still looking for work? And I'm like, yeah. And he's like, all right, come by tomorrow. I'm like, all right, and that's how it started and ended. Like, it was
nice.
Then he went to the Estes House Hotel, and I wouldn't even say a week later. It was like 5 days later. I get a call from the Estes House because it's a union place, so you have to know somebody to get into the local six.
Gotcha.
To get an interview.
Gotcha.
And he's like, oh, we're here to schedule your. I'm here to call about your interview. I'm like, what interview? He's like, oh, well, Morgan wants you over here. I'm like, okay, not knowing what was going on. And I go over and, you know, I'm like, so what's going on? He's like, here's your locker. Here's your lock. Get changed. Let's go. I didn't even put my notice in at the Russian Tea Room yet. So it was kind of a weird time. But at least while I was at the Russian Tea Room, there was I did learn a lot about.
Isn't that a legendary spot?
It is a legendary spot.
I've heard so much about it. I've actually never personally been. I mean, it doesn't surprise me because I'm not the, you know, I guess I'm not the typical type to go to some place like that, but I've heard just so many stories about it.
You know, I would say, like, back in the day before even our day, that was like,
right.
If you're during like the theater seasons, like, you would go there for a prefixed meal, then you go next door to Carnegie Hall,
right.
see the performance, and you would come back afterwards and right. have your desserts and your your port wines and stuff like that.
Gotcha.
You know, it has such a historic place in New York City. But the problem with the Russian Tea Room is it so many times over the years has switched hands. I think right now the PGA owns the Russian Tea Room. Like, the last time I heard the PGA, I was like, okay, that's
professional. Wow, the golf.
Because originally when I first worked there, it was owned by the same family that owned a Tavern on the Green.
Oh, okay.
But when the father passed away, they sold it off, and it changes hands so many times.
Right.
But at least it's still open.
Yeah.
At least I think it's still open. I can't honestly say.
Gotcha.
But the Estes House, that I really enjoyed working there.
But that's another well-known place, isn't it?
Yes.
So it's like one place to another. You're just jumping.
Yeah. You know, I set out, like, in the back of my mind, like, I don't want to go to a place that nobody really has not heard of.
Right.
But then again, there's places that are known of, but you don't want to put them on your resume. Like, and I've seen faces drop when I tell them where I did work, but I've seen their faces lift up where I tell them where they work, and they're like, oh, okay. Oh, you work there? Oh, I'm sorry. You know, it's an interesting concept of knowing where to work and where not to work.
Gotcha.
I just say you want to just work and learn as much as you can. You know, you're not going to learn if you don't work there. You know, I could say I wouldn't be in a position where I am if I didn't learn from past employers how to run a business or treat their employees with respect or anything along those lines. Because if you just you know, yell at your employees, or if you don't know how to run a business, you're never going to succeed.
Right.
So then eventually when my wife was finishing her residency, because we were living at that time, we were living like in Northwest Chester, New York. We finally bought our home in Newtown.
Awesome. Where about Westchester? Because I worked in Westchester.
We were living in Cortland Manor.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So I worked in Armonk. So.
Oh, okay. Yeah. It was, you know, we lived at this person's house. It was quaint. It's quaint, you know.
Oh yeah, Westchester. Typical Westchester, yeah. Right? A little quaint house.
Yeah. And it was, you know, it was a peaceful area. It wasn't like, you know,
very nice.
Like if we were like in you know, lower Westchester County, like it was
yeah, the closer you get to White Plains, the louder it gets.
Exactly. But then once we moved to Connecticut, at the time, like I was working at Wave Hill Breads in Norwalk at the time.
Right. We were talking about that before.
Prior to that, I was at the Russian Tea Room. No, I'm sorry, not Russian. Roger Sherman Inn in New Canaan.
How was that?
You know what?
I guess that says it all.
You know, I got along with the executive chef very well.
Cool.
I got along with a lot of people there. It was just one of those places where I wish it could have, I could have done more, but it was just, at that point I was done with restaurants. I think that was the last restaurant I worked at.
Gotcha.
I decided, you know, at that point I just had my second kid. I'm like, you know what? I need a better lifestyle. I need a better work environment. So that's when I went to Wave Hill Breads.
I just want to bake in a bakery.
Yeah. It was just, I was tired of coming up with plated desserts. I was tired of like, it was just nuts. Like you work on Christmas Eve, you work on Christmas Day, you work on New Year's Eve, New Year's Day, Thanksgiving. Like there's no time for family. And they instill that in you. They're like, oh no, you're not seeing your family tonight. You're not going home. You're not doing it. It's like, It got to a point where I was like,
the industry kind of just sucks you in.
Yeah. Like, at this point, I was just like, part of my French, but I was like, fuck this. I I'm not saying that like working at a bakery has better hours, but the difference is I'd rather start early in the morning than
right
by like 10, 11 o'clock, you know, be done with my day and I can actually go about my day and not have to be so exhausted.
Yeah.
You know,
be with your family, be with your kids.
Exactly.
You know, enjoy the day.
Yeah. So it was, I also liked the graveyard hour shifts. It was, you don't really have to deal with anybody. You don't really have to deal with, owners to a certain extent. You know, it's, you could blast music and just have fun.
I like that. That sounds like me.
Yeah.
It's being alone, blasting music, doing what you love.
And then, after Wave Hill, I went to Ross's Bread in Ridgefield. Then Tom Tom's Bakery, which is no longer around. And then I made my way to Cafe Espresso, then Bantam Breads, and
here we are at
Uncle Matt's.
And I'm talking to Uncle Matt. What came into the name?
So it was kind of interesting. Back when I was working at the S's house, there was, you know, a lot of my coworkers that, you know, some came from Trinidad, some came from Haiti, like Portugal. Like it was a very international bunch. So one of my coworkers apparently was having an issue with his neighbor. And he turns to me, he's like, oh, what should I do about it? I was like, do you want a Matt answer or do you want an uncle answer? And he's like, what's an uncle answer? I'm like, do you really want the uncle answer? And at that point I was thinking about what would my uncle tell me to do?
That's great.
And then the next day, all of a sudden people are like, hey, Uncle Matt. I'm like, oh, okay.
I'm so glad this has a great story. I wasn't sure.
And the funny thing is it just kind of followed with me. I never went around saying like, oh, what should we call you? I just say, call me Matt. It just started turning like calling me Uncle Matt. Cause I had like all these weird stories and I had bad uncle jokes to go with it. So, but it was also like for job to job, it was turning into like, I don't know. It was just like the other coworkers would look to me to talk to management like I was the Lorax or something. And it was just like, no, just at that point, I was like, just call me Uncle Matt. But the funny thing was, one day I changed my Instagram page, my personal Instagram page, to Uncle Matt the Baker. And
I love it.
When I was thinking about a name for the bakery, I was having a really hard time. Like, I was like, why is this becoming so hard?
It's like naming a band. It's
yeah,
like,
exactly.
What are we doing here?
And it's like, I didn't want to name something that like nobody could pronounce or like that wouldn't make sense. Like,
sure.
So I remember asking my old coworker from Bantam Bread, and I was like, you know, what should I do? And like, he's like, oh, just use your Instagram name.
Uncle Matt.
I was like, I had to think about it for a second. I'm like, done. So that's where it came about. You know, I am an uncle in real life. My brother has very two cool, wonderful daughters. And he, you know, I wish I could see them a lot more, but unfortunately they do live down in Philadelphia and I can't get down there all the time.
Gotcha.
But, I try to like, my kids try to, FaceTime with them every now and again, see how they're doing. That's when I get to see them more often.
I was going to say, what is it like to be an uncle to, you know, Newtown and Sandy Hook? We're talking like 30, 40, 50,000 people.
I just consider it a bigger family. I really do. I love Newtown. When my wife and I first bought our house and we moved in, we were thrown back. I remember our neighbors coming up to us and like bringing us flowers and cookies. Then all of a sudden, one of my neighbors comes down the driveway with his riding mower. He's like, "Here, I got you this." I'm like, "What?"
Sounds like Newtown and Sandy Hook.
A handshake could have just been fine.
He's
showing me how to work it. I'm like, I it's fine. I got a push mower. It's fine. But it was such like coming from like the New York area. It was just like,
oh, yeah.
Wow.
Night
like,
day.
I was so happy. And we're still thrilled to be in this area. Like we've been here for almost 10 years now. And I couldn't really picture my life without this town.
Well, we're glad to have you here. Yeah. And I know that because when I told you when I came in here, all I hear everywhere I go, Uncle Matt, Uncle Matt, Uncle Matt. I'm like, I need an Uncle Matt in my life. And I need to talk to Uncle Matt. We need to chat. And it's so great. And, you know, you bring up so many things that people tell me when they move to Newtown. I've known some friends or just some people I've met out and moved to Newtown recently. And they're like, man, the people here just... they're unbelievable. They'll do anything. Like your neighbors will do anything for you. And I'm like, that's Newtown. I'm like, welcome to town. I'm like, you know, this is what we do. And I have a coworker, Joe. He's a big fan of the show. And he was looking for a place to live. And I said, hey, he was moving from Rhode Island. I said, Newtown, baby, let's go. And he moved on the boulevard and he lives right next door to a good friend of mine. And they're good friends now, and they help each other out and do the neighbor thing, and it's amazing.
Yeah, it's awesome. it truly is. And you know, I all four of my kids have grown up in this house. My older daughter Paige was actually in 2013 firstborn of Newtown. So I remember getting
there. You go.
So I remember like having the Newtown B.
You get that B article, baby.
Exactly, and getting all the gift certificates to the liquor store.
Shout out to the Newtown B. Shout out to fellow journalists.
So that was cool. And like, I used to tell, and I, same thing, like I tell people, like, if you can find a house in Newtown, you better grab it.
Oh,
it doesn't matter what, it doesn't matter what part of Newtown. Like we all look out for one another.
Oh,
and
we
we're always friendly with outsiders. It's not like we're, you know, a completely gated community or anything. It's just fun to know that like we all really truly care about one another.
Yeah. And we were strong before what happened at Sandy Hook, which happened right down the street from where we are. And I was directly involved with that. My dad worked at Sandy Hook School. My cousin was there that day. That was a crazy day, but we didn't even need that day. But after that day, it was like, forget it. Newtown is just, it's one of those towns where you come and we just wrap your arms around you.
Yeah. And so. I remember, I don't want to get too much into what happened.
Yeah, no, of course. Yeah, of course not.
Not exactly like a happy story or anything.
Of course not.
But I do remember like trying to help out one of the victims, I guess family friend, started an organization I'm gonna hack the name. Please forgive me. It's like Dylan's Wings or something.
Sure.
And I did like a baking. I did like a baguette class just to help raise money for it and everything. And I, cool. It was something like, okay, we just moved here. We literally just moved to Newtown like 6 or 7 months before the incident. And sure. It was so heartbreaking. And like, I just said, anything I can do, you know, just reach out. And I'm still that way today. Like, you know, I'm always I tell the schools, like, anytime there's a PTA event, please let me know. I'll be happy to distribute or contribute to it any way I can. And I remember when I first opened, there was this gentleman, Sean Fitzpatrick, who runs the Real Food Share program.
Yep.
And he asked, like, well, would you be willing to do an event with us? And I'm like, done. Just tell me date and time.
Great guy.
And in the beginning, he told me he will pick up any unused, unsold bread and help distribute it. I'm like, awesome. I don't want to go into waste. I do give my landlord, because he does own Figs, left some bread from the end of the day so he can use it in his restaurants and just give it out. I'm like, here, just take it, you know. I'd rather your customers have it than going into trash.
Gotcha. You're a man of the people.
I try to be.
Uncle Matt is here for the people.
I try to be, because it's awesome. It's always something bigger than me. It's always like I would hate to like not contribute back what people have contributed towards me.
Sure.
So, and that's one thing my mentor Morgan told me is like, you know, you can put everything out on a plate, but at the end of the day, it's what you give back will bring people back. And I always, at the time, I didn't really think too much of it. I was younger.
Sure.
Yeah,
of course.
Yeah, I honestly see what he means now. And like he actually contacted me a couple months ago out of the blue. And that's when I started doing this Swedish cinnamon buns. Mm. And the funny thing was like I had half of a recipe of it. I'm like, can you finally give me the recipe? He's like, fine, here it is. So it was fun. It was fun to introduce it. I haven't done it in a little while, only because I don't want to keep doing the same thing over and over again, because obviously I would shoot my brains out. Like I really would. I can't do the same thing day in, day out. I have to switch it up. That's why I don't have the same breads every day.
Who doesn't love that?
So
that's right up my alley.
Yeah.
When you switch things up, I'm your fan. I'm your everything.
Like today was like the first time in a while that I had the raspberry croissants.
Ugh.
And like yesterday was the first time I brought back the Queen Amons. You know, next week I'll probably do something I haven't done in a while. Like it's
diversity.
Just, exactly.
Oh, I love it.
Like I like to keep things interesting. You know, there are some things on the menu that are constant. Like I will always have my sourdough. That will always be there. I will always have a plain croissant and a chocolate croissant.
But I'm glad you're bringing this up, because I was just about to say, yeah. What are some staples here? What are some things that you rock here?
Well, supposedly I make a good sourdough bread.
Supposedly. I love it. Supposedly.
And also a good croissant. The dirt bombs are a constant favorite of people. I would love to say the monkey breads, but unfortunately I don't have them every day. Most of the stuff in the dry bakery case we have every day, like the traditional cookies, coffee cakes and stuff like that. Right now we're doing our moose hearts up until Valentine's Day.
Yeah, Valentine's Day right around the corner.
and
awesome.
Yeah, and the bread schedule is pretty much stapled. Like, you know, every day we have these 5 or 6 daily breads, but then we have a specialty bread every day.
Gotcha.
Saturdays is when we have the most bread. We have like the cinnamon raisin bread, a cranberry walnut rye, multigrain. And I'm going to be introducing, once my bread oven comes in, I'm going to be introducing newer breads.
Oh, like, it's going to be game over at that point.
Yeah. Everybody's asking me for a pumpernickel. Everybody's asking me for a marble rye.
It's good.
It is good. It's just, those are two tricky breads that if you don't have the right environment for it, a right baking facility for it, I don't want to waste my time, or I don't want to waste money on ingredients for it. It just, it won't, doesn't make sense.
I'm so glad you brought that up about time and about you know, things coming together with your dough and with your bread, because one crucial question I was going to ask is, being a baker, someone who deals with dough and bread and everything like that, you got to have a lot of patience, I would assume, because to me, it seems daunting to bake and to deal with dough, because if you fuck it up, I mean, you're kind of fucked, right? Or no? Like, to me, it seems daunting. So,
you know what?
I feel like a lot of patience goes into what you do.
You know, there's two sides to it. Like, when it comes to, like, pastries, like, you can, if you forget an ingredient, yes, that can screw up an entire batch of something, whether it's cookies or if it's a cake or something. With breads, if you forget salt, you can, the bread is not going to, it's not going to be great. But you'll, like, if you're a trained baker, like, if you're a trained bread baker, you'll know if somebody forgot salt. But you taste the dough.
Sure.
And like, that's what I try to teach my bakers. I'm like, taste everything. Make sure you have everything in it.
Gotcha.
Before it even goes into the bread basket, or if it goes into before it goes into the oven, just taste it. If it does, if it's missing something, don't bother. With bread though, it's like there's a whole formula that like most bread breakers will follow, and that's like you take the temperature of the air, you take the temperature of the flour, you take the temperature of your starters if you're using one, and that's how you calculate like the water temperature, so it doesn't, you know, speed up in the fermentation, or it's not, it doesn't go too slow either. It's kind of one of those, like in the winter time, you're just going to be using warmer water. In the summer, you're going to try to use as ice cold water as possible. Sometimes we would just use, take half the water amount out from our dough and just add ice just to cool it down. Because when the mixer, it just heats up everything. But, it's
interesting.
That's where baking and science really come together.
Yeah, it's not easy.
No, it isn't. And trust me, I sucked at science when I was a kid. Like, I sucked. I was telling you before,
science and math, forget it. Yeah, throw it out the window.
Yeah, I hated it. Like, math, like, yeah, I don't really care so much about geometry or anything like that. But, like, you know, basic math is what you used to have to do. I actually used to have, when I was working in restaurants and I was the pastry chef, when I interviewed somebody, I would give them a math test, because I didn't want to say, okay, here, take this recipe and like make four times, not knowing what the right calculations are.
Right.
So I would give in, like, honestly, there weren't hard questions. It'd be 10 questions, and I would have like eight of them would be like what I'm looking for, where two of them are like trick questions. It was, the answer would be, ask the chef, you know, pretty much. But they, even some of my executive chefs are like looking at me like, doing this. I'm like,
thank you so much for listening to part number one of a two-part conversation with Matthew Kirshner of Uncle Matt's Bakery and Cafe. Stay tuned next week for part two and a continuation from where we left off. Yet again, another episode of Sweeten Up is in the books. Thank you so much for listening. Be sure to rate, review, and subscribe anywhere you get your podcasts. We would greatly appreciate your feedback and support. As a reminder, you can play the podcast with the help of your smart speaker by simply saying, play the podcast Sweeten Up with Jeff Spencer. Thank you as always to my best friends, the guys who make it all possible, post-production and music Morgan Lutzi, production and art director Kurt Vinci, editor and writer Nick Pasticretta, and a special thanks as always to Devin Cipelli. As I said at the top, we will be back next Friday with a brand new episode of the show, part two of a two-part podcast episode with our friend, Uncle Matt, Matthew Kirshner. But until then, you know the deal. Stay safe, stay healthy. Love you all. Peace.